lady or this couple, I think you could pray for them privately. Mr. and Mrs. Price, L.H. Price, a very fine brother, goes to the old chapel. His wife has not enjoyed the best of health for some time. Understand she is very sick again. Possibility is more surgery, or she may need to take treatment for the rest of her life, really. That can be quite an upset. So kindly remember that couple in your prayers, will you? Mr. and Mrs. Price. He's been helping them at the old chapel now for some time. He's a good brother. I think he was once or perhaps twice down here. Keep praying for them, that the Lord will bless them in the midst of the sickness. Now, on Sunday night, we dealt with the song from Exodus 15. We pointed out that this is the first song in the Bible, and it's most interesting to find out that they're singing not only to the Lord, but they're singing about the Lord. And I tried to stress that when we meet together, especially on a Sunday when we come to remember the Lord, may I suggest this to some of you brethren who take part in leading that meeting. You should spend time at home with your Bible and hymn book in view of that meeting. Go over those hymns in that remembrance hymn book. Get acquainted with them and see how much you'll find in these hymns expressing things concerning the Lord, so that when you come together for the remembrance meeting and your mind is full of these ideas and hymns, and perhaps someone in their thanksgiving expresses a certain line of truth, and immediately your mind goes to that hymn about the Lord, and you're ready, and the Spirit of God can use you. And some of you younger men, and you say, now what can we do? Well, get yourself acquainted with portions of the Word of God that deal with the person of Christ, and get to know those hymns that we sing about Him, and you're in tune. I stress that again, because this first song in the Bible is a song about the Lord. And there's so many hymns in that hymn book that tell you about the Lord and the things He has done and what He will do. And then not only is it about the Lord, it's something that's presented to the Lord. But you know, as I said on Sunday night, you don't spend all your time singing. It'd be wonderful if we could, wouldn't it? I know some folk who sing at times when they shouldn't. That is, they sing when they're in the bath, you know. They say you should never sing when you're in the bath. I don't know why, but I know you can't sing when you're shaving. At least if you still shave with the blade. Don't try to do that, or you might find yourself in difficulties. And some folks sing in their sleep. Well, that's not a good thing either. You might waken the others up. There are times to sing, but there's some experiences in life when you don't feel like singing. And that's what we're going to read about for a little moment now. Let's start our reading at verse 22. And you'll see now, after they've been singing the song, what happened. So Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea, and they went out into the wilderness of Shur. And they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. When they came to Marah, they could not drink of the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore the name of it was called Marah. And the people murmured against Moses, saying, what shall we drink? And he cried unto the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree, which, when he had cast into the waters were made sweet. There he made for them a statute and an ordinance. And there he proved them and said, if thou wilt diligently hearken to the voice of the Lord thy God, and will do that which is right in his sight, and will give ear to his commandments, and keep all his statutes, I will put none of these diseases upon thee, which I have brought upon the Egyptians. For I am the Lord that healeth thee. And they came to Elim, where were 12 wells of water, 70 palm trees, and they encamped there by the waters. The Lord have blessed to us the reading of these verses. Now then, in the first part of the chapter, we were dealing with this great song. Each little part of it is very interesting, as you remember. But now, moving on from the record of the song, we're led into the wilderness. And then we come to the place called Marah. Then we come to the place called Elim. Being brought into the wilderness, there was the need for direction. It's all right going along the highways. The powers that be have put up those signposts. And they're fairly good, at least in North Carolina they are. We've some got good signposts, until somebody knocks them down, of course. But you see a few knocked down, but not in these ones overhead. They're very good. They give you direction. But you get some places, you know, and it's very difficult to know which direction you're traveling. I told you the other week, there's a road away up there. I can't remember exactly whether it's in Virginia or West Virginia. It's up there somewhere. You're traveling along this highway, and you're going west and north and south at the same time. It sounds very strange, doesn't it? It's like a Virginia one. You've got to understand their language to understand what they're telling you at times, see? And here it is, it's such and such a road north, and such a road south, and such a road west. And there you are, three different numbers, three different directions, and you're going on that road. But when you're going through the wilderness, you need direction. I used to love that little chorus, they used to sing it on the old-fashioned revival hour in the old days. My Lord knows the way through the wilderness. All I have to do is follow. You see, he's leading. And if he knows the way, all you have to do is follow. Now he led them up. Now notice what it said. Now, so Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea, and they went out into the wilderness of Shur, and they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. Now you know, and I know of course, it was not God's intention to leave his children wandering in the wilderness. It's perfectly true he delivered them and brought them out of Egypt. But it was with the objective in view of taking them into the promised land. But from the time they came out from Egypt until the time they entered the promised land, they had to pass through the wilderness. Now that day that the Lord saved you, and the day the Lord saved me, it would have been a very, very easy thing for the Lord just to have said, now then, I've saved you, so come on, come right up to heaven now and enjoy heaven. But he didn't do that. He saved us, and he saved us from the awful penalty of sin. As it were, he brought us out from Egypt. He set our feet on redemption ground. But he left us here in the wilderness. This world is just like a barren wilderness. That's all it is. And you and I have been left here, some perhaps more years than others. But he leaves us here, and you know that a wilderness is not always a pleasant place to be. There's a lot of things associated with a wilderness that makes it very difficult. But again, I want to emphasize this, that in traveling through the wilderness, the first thing we need is direction. If we don't get direction, we'll go wrong. It's a very strange experience to be out in the snow. You don't get much down here. When you do, it comes today and goes tomorrow. But I remember one night, along with someone else, we were traveling home, and the snow was on the ground, and we knew there was a shortcut. We'd cut off at least a mile from the road we were traveling, Instead of traveling by the road, we were going over a piece of land that is now a golf course. But you know, when there was snow on the ground about a foot deep and snow over there, about, it didn't make much difference. You know, we'd as well take the shortcut, we thought. So off we went. We did know this, that somewhere over there in that piece of land where we're going to travel and take the shortcut, we knew there was an old quarry. So we had to watch. It was at night, but the moon was shining. You know, we thought we were doing fine, wading our way through the snow and making for the place where we wanted to get out here onto the road again. And all of a sudden, we came to footmarks. Well, they said there must be somebody else in front of us. On we went. Came to more footmarks. And it suddenly dawned on us we're going round in circles. Follow your own footmarks. Well, you know, we could have gone for a long time if it hadn't dawned on us what we were doing. We needed direction. Or else it might have gone on for hours going around thinking we're getting on with a crowd of people. When you see that strange, how didn't you know? You try it sometime. You try it. You see, if you're going through the wilderness, I suppose in the sand it's the same as trying to go through snow in a dark night. You need leadership in order to have direction. Leadership that was required. See, after being delivered from the bondage of Egypt, it was necessary for the Israelites to get the right direction. So, Moses led them. He led them out. Because they're going to start on the pilgrim life now. It's a wonderful thing when people get saved. I would like to see more people getting saved now, wouldn't you? Now, I know you've been praying for it, and we're all anxious to see the certain people you pray for. You mention them by name to the Lord, at least I hope you do. See, sometimes you perhaps don't mention them by name in a public prayer meeting, but I hope when you get on your knees at home, at the bedside, that you pray and mention them by name. And you, a man who used to be an evangelist, is dead with the Lord now, and he told us that he had two boys. And after he'd been away preaching perhaps for a week or 2 weeks, and he'd get home late on a Friday night after his last meeting, and he'd get in, the first thing he would ask his wife, "How's the boys?" "Well, they're in bed, they're upstairs." He said, "I used to run upstairs right away, and there they were. It's the first thing I did, I'd get down at the bedside. And I'd pray there at the bedside for my boys." God answered his prayers. I've been in the home of one of them, nice boy. First thing his dad did to get home, pray with his boys. Of course the boys wouldn't hear him, they were sleeping, but he's praying for his boys. Now I hope you're able to pray for your boys. Not only pray for them, but perhaps pray with them. Perhaps that's one of the mistakes that some parents make. They don't pray with their children. You pray with them. And they grow up in that atmosphere. Leadership. You see, it's all right when a person gets saved. It's wonderful when people get saved. But remember this, because a person is saved, that's not the end. That's only the beginning. Getting out of Egypt was not the end of the pilgrimage, it was the beginning of the pilgrimage. And the first thing they needed was directions in the wilderness. And let me say this, if people get saved, that's not the end, that's only the beginning. They need help. A baby needs to be nursed. A baby needs to be fed. Needs to be trained. And young Christians, if they just get saved, they need to be helped. They need to be nurtured with the word. They need to be encouraged. They need to be given directions in life. See, we don't know it all when we get saved. In fact, all we know is the Lord has saved us. And that's one thing, but that's only the beginning. Leadership is necessary in the pilgrim life. And we need leadership. But there's a second thing they need here. It was the Lord who sheltered them in Egypt, wasn't it? He says, "I will pass over you." It was the Lord who delivered them through the Red Sea. They couldn't deliver themselves. It was the Lord that made the way and delivered them through the Red Sea. And now, they must acknowledge His authority or His lordship. That's the first thing He's going to teach them. They'll have to acknowledge His lordship, His authority. Now, I've mentioned this before on a number of occasions, and I'm going to mention it again tonight because to me it's ultra important. When you come to the first epistle to the Corinthians, we all know this. There was a tremendous number of things wrong in Corinth. It was a church in utter confusion. That's all it was. And when you go through that epistle, you'll find this. The Lord is mentioned 70 times in the 16 chapters. Actually, He's mentioned 6 to 9 times, you remember? And the 70th time, it's under that word, Maranatha, which means the Lord cometh, or the coming of the Lord, which makes 70 times the Lord is presented in the first epistle to the Corinthians. Why? Because it's obvious all that went wrong in Corinth was because the people failed to acknowledge the lordship of Christ. Right here in Exodus, when the children of Israel are brought out from Egypt and across the Red Sea, they needed leadership through the wilderness and the pilgrim journey, and they required to acknowledge the lordship of Christ. He took them, Moses led them, and notice where, they went 3 days in the wilderness, 3 days. Now, I don't need to expand on that to you people here tonight. I think most of you know the meaning of the 3 days. Even go back to the book of Genesis and see what happened on the third day. It's a picture of resurrection. Life out of death. When you come to the New Testament, destroy this body and in 3 days I'll raise it up again. When they came to the tomb on the first day of the week was the third day, tomb was empty. Third day, resurrection day. When you and I come to Romans chapter 6, we're taught a lesson there. We're taught the very basic meaning of our baptism. That we have died with Christ, we've been buried with Christ, we've been raised with Christ. We're on resurrection ground. And on resurrection ground, surely, there's the ground where we acknowledge the lordship of Christ. He took them 3 days into the wilderness. Well, the lesson to be learned, no doubt, there is this, that life is sustained by confidence in God. They had to have confidence in God on the night of the Passover. They had to have confidence in God when He led them through the Red Sea. Now they'll require to express their confidence in God day by day as they travel on through the wilderness journey. And that's exactly what you and I learn in our Christian experience. We learn to acknowledge the lordship of Christ. We learn to express our confidence in God. All right. Strange thing, they found no water. 3 days. The water they brought with them from Egypt wouldn't last any longer. Even if they did have water bottles. You try it, even in the weather we've been having. You take some water, it may be nice and cool, and you put it into a water bottle, an old goat skin, and you have a drink of it after 3 days. I watch even the birds coming down to the bird bath, you know. If it's been in there 2 or 3 days, they're just washing it, that's all. You don't take much of it. But they like the nice, cool water. So do you. After 3 days, their water was spent. Didn't have any. What do you do when the water's spent in the bottle? We need water. And they came to Mara. And when you come to Mara, it's Mara with its disappointments. We need water. They came to the water of Mara. And they tried it. It's bitter. it's one thing to want a drink, but to go and take a drink and discover that it's sour, bitter water, you know what you would do with it. They're complaining about some of the pollution of some of our waters round about here just now, the lakes and so on. Mara with his disappointment. Listen, let me ask you tonight. Some of you have been saved for many years. Some perhaps not so long, few years. And you know, when you trusted the Lord, everything was nice, wasn't it? You felt like singing, like what they did. But can you remember the first experience you had of disappointment in your Christian life? Can you recall it? How many times have you had since then times of disappointment? How many disappointments have you had in your life? You've had disappointments perhaps in connection with your work. You've had disappointments perhaps in connection with your friends and your relatives. I was almost going to say your in-laws, but we better not say that. But you've had disappointments, haven't you? One way or another. Disappointments. Sometimes you have disappointments in assembly life. Sometimes you have disappointments when you have a special series of meetings. They don't turn out the way you would like them. You travel quite a distance, you go to a conference, and you're expecting to get a little uplift. And you don't get it. You come home disappointed. And you say it wasn't worth going for. Come home with a sad heart instead of being encouraged. You know, disappointments. Things don't go the way you want them to go. Or it may be sickness strikes. Mara. Do you remember a woman who took that for a name? Now, if you had a little girl born, you wouldn't call her Mara, would you? You might call her Mary or Miriam, but you wouldn't call her Mara. Why? Because Mara means bitterness. Bitterness. This woman went out, you remember? Naomi. And she come back and they say this Naomi. She said, don't call me that. Call me Mara. The Lord has dealt bitterly with me. She wanted to take the name of bitterness. Mara with his disappointments, and what did they do? They murmured. Now, let me remind you of this. Murmuring is a sin. We'll not turn up to the scripture now. You can take a mental note of it. Turn up when you go home and read it, because we've read it often here before. It's found in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, where warnings are given of at least five things that the Lord held against the children of Israel. And the Christians are warned not to be guilty of the same thing. And one of the things of which the children of Israel were guilty was the sin of murmuring. Do you ever think murmuring was a sin? They murmured. They quickly forgot that God was the God of the waters. Wasn't he the God of the waters when he dealt with the waters down in Egypt? Wasn't he the God of the waters when he split the Red Sea and brought them through? If he was the God of the waters, why couldn't they just turn to God? He's the God of the waters. I understand he's going to give us some rain tomorrow. Thankful for that. I hope it's true. But even if we don't get it, we'll not murmur. We mustn't murmur. He's the God of the weather. When I go back to the little book of Amos, we learn there that he caused it to rain on one city. And he caused it not to rain on another city. He did. He's the God of the weather. And they murmured. They quickly forgot that God was the God of the waters. And they turned against Moses, their leader. And they blamed him. They've got to blame somebody. Things went wrong in the Garden of Eden. Adam says, well, it wasn't me, it was that woman that you gave me. You hadn't given her to me, this wouldn't have happened. In effect, he was trying to blame God, wasn't he? We couldn't blame God, he'd blame the woman. He said, it's not me. When God spoke to Eve, she says, it wasn't me. It was the serpent. Always ready to blame somebody else. Here they're blaming Moses, the leader. It led to disappointment and confusion that didn't know what to do. I'm thankful that Moses knew what to do. What would you do? What should we do? Let's ask that question. What should we do in similar circumstances? When they came to Moses, and he cried unto the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree, which, when he had cast into the waters were made sweet. Moses knew what to do. He had the answer to it. He turned to the Lord. And it led to this great miracle, the prayer of Moses. And as he turned to the Lord and put the problem before him, God showed him a tree. I mean, we don't need to stretch this in any way whatsoever. What is the answer to all our problems of disappointments and suffering? The tree. Look to the tree. Have you ever thought of what the Lord passed through that day when he was on that cross? Did anyone ever suffer like the Lord? Have you ever thought of what happened the night before when Judas went out and the Lord knew where he was going? That thou doest do quickly. Judas went out and got a band of men and led them down to the garden and sought to betray the Lord with a kiss. And that night when he was being harangued in front of those priests and leaders, Peter stood and with an oath denied the Lord. The rest forsook him and fled. And alone he was led the next day to Calvary. Think of that heart-rending cry, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? The cross. The Lord showed him a tree. And he cut down the tree and put it in the water. The water was made sweet. You know, we often quote the scriptures, quoted often at prayer meetings, that we have a throne of grace. We can come to the throne of grace and here obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need. Why? How do we know that? Because up there we have a great high priest. One who can be touched with the feeling of our infirmities. How can he be touched like that? Because he has passed through and has been tempted in every way like us. There's not a temptation, not a trial that will cross your path or mine, but he understands it up there. I show him the tree. And the bitter waters were made sweet. If he could heal the bitter waters, he can heal the bitter soul. But the principle must be observed. Now watch the principle. Look what it says. And there he made for them a statute. I hope you understand a statute is not a statue. I mention that because I knew one old man and knew quite a lot about his Bible, but he always called a statute a statue. And he called a statue a statute. He always changed the names round. He gave a statute and an ordinance. And there he proved them and said, what's this now? If thou wilt diligently hearken to the voice of the Lord thy God. That's number one. Hearken to the voice of the Lord thy God. That's the first thing, beloved, we've got to do. No matter what the circumstances may be, we've got to lend our ear to what the Lord has to say to us through his word. But that's not sufficient. Thou wilt diligently hearken to the voice of the Lord thy God and will do that which is right in his sight. Now that's exactly the main lesson again, and I want to harp back on this, that Lacey's been giving us now throughout the past quarter from the Epistle of James. You know, the whole outline of James is really this. If you know these things, happy are ye if you do them. Don't just be hearers of the word, but be doers also. So you see, it's if you hearken to the voice of the Lord thy God and will do that which is right in his sight and will give ear to his commandments and keep all his statutes, I will put none of these diseases upon thee which I have brought upon the Egyptians, for I am the Lord that healeth thee. And here's the principle. We must listen to what the Lord has to say, be obedient to it, and he says, then I'll provide, I'll look after you, I'll watch over you in the wilderness. Finish up with the last verse. It's one verse, but what a tremendous verse. And they came to Elim. See, they didn't stay at Marah. Marah was just a passing experience. And might I say this to all of us tonight? Those bitter experiences in life are passing. Don't let us linger on them. Let us get past with them. Like the old woman who said she loved that promise in the Bible where it says, and it came to pass. She liked those things that came to pass. So we should want them to come and pass. Those bitter experiences, don't linger on them, because get on to Elim. Now, Elim is with its delights. Elim was a delightful place. They encamped at Elim. They didn't encamp at Marah. And if you and I are going to encamp at Marah, we're going to keep ourselves bitter for a long time. Let's get past the bitterness. Put the message of the cross into it. Sweeten it up and then get on to Elim. Because when they came to Elim, it was a place of refreshment for the thirsty. There were 12 wells there. No difficulty there. 12 wells. The water springing up for them. It wasn't bitter water, good water. If there were 12 wells, there was a well for every tribe. They didn't need to quarrel about whose well it was. A well for each of them. They wouldn't run dry while they were there. No cause for jealousy. No one needed to go thirsty. It was a place of rest for the weary, for the encamped there by the waters. They found rest under the palm trees. Palm trees are an indication it was an oasis. They would see them as they were approaching them. It would give them shelter from the sun. A place of retreat for the distressed. You see, the bitter experience of Marah was something they met with just in passing. But they encamped at Elim. Now, what would happen when they encamped? They would renew their strength. They had a journey before them. And you and I need to rest a while. We need to renew our strength. The Lord says, come ye yourselves apart and rest. Rest a while. Rest at Elim. Don't rest at Marah. Get to Elim where the wells are, where the palm trees are. 70. Well, if you're going to live 70 years, you'll have a palm tree for every year and a well for every tribe. 12 months in the year, you have a well for every month. See, the Lord gives a full provision for us on the pilgrim journey. Now, our brother Jerry will start us off at the weekend, and for the next Wednesdays he'll be giving us a series. I don't know what he's going to give us. That'll be up to him now. And Jerry will be taking us next Wednesday, and perhaps sometime later on we'll continue with chapter 16 of Exodus. It's taken us 2 months to get through 15 chapters. Perhaps some brother who hasn't prayed at the beginning may close the meeting now with a word of prayer.